constitutional engagement and resolve this question so that we can tell the citizens.
Okay, well, we're still missing three people. Well, let's go before.
I have a minute.
but I don't care when you want to do it.
Which one is worth it?
That parking is due to reach the door.
Has the subcommittee acted on it?
Yes.
We have more discussion than price one, how are we gonna price it pretty much?
Okay, well, that's what we'll do then. Well, let me present my other, problem to you before we get to building codes. We've had a discussion, and that is Representative Cole Frost and myself, had, a discussion with the, Senator Sadler, Wilmers, and Hoyt, as well as Representative Hansel. And, I'm sorry that Keith Skelton wasn't here. He was aware that we were going to have the meeting, however, and we're trying to find out what is the best vehicle to use for constitutional revision. As you know, we passed out, HJR 47, but we have not yet, sent it to the printer to be wrote. It would be my suggestion to this committee that we accept the, that we let the Senate go ahead and introduce their SJR 23, and hopefully they'll get it to the Senate and we'll use that as a vehicle. The only reason that is preferred apparently over, our SJR 23 is that it has approximately 2,000 words less, and it is less controversial. In other words, it doesn't have the recommendations that the committee has suggested, but at least will give us a vehicle to work with. Would any member of this committee have any objection then if I could not introduce HJR 47 until we had an opportunity to look at SJR 23? All right, let the record show that there is no objection to this, and we will then use their vehicle at least initially. Okay, now it's time for a hearing on Senate Bill 506. We've got a sign-up sheet here, and I note on the sign-up sheet that there are a number of people from the Oregon Newspaper Publishers Association who would like to talk on the bill. It would be my thinking, as far as I'm aware, that the only people opposing this bill, SB 506, are the Oregon Newspaper Publishers Association. So I believe would be, is there anyone else here outside of the Oregon Newspaper Publishers Association who are opposing the bill? If not, then it would be my suggestion that we first hear from them, then we'll go to members of the home improvement group that wrote the bill, or prehistory of the bill, then go to Mr. Frost, who will explain it to us, and then to members of the committee, would be happy to fill in any details or answer any questions that we might have. Is there any objection to this format? If not, then let's start with, I don't have my glasses. Ola Dean, Phil Gladine, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Phil Gladine, the publisher of the News Register papers in McMinnville, and I'm chairman of the legislative committee for the Oregon Newspaper Publishers Association. I think all of you have a copy of the statement. Have that, and perhaps in comment any questions that I can answer, and also Mr. Wilmers. he would like to comment on it. When the state assumes a role in the marshaling and distribution of assets of an estate, it also assumes an obligation to afford due process to all interested parties, unknown heirs, unknown creditors, and others interested in the estate. Published notice in a newspaper fulfills the requirements of due process more effectively and efficiently than any other alternative method. It is easily accomplished because there is a local newspaper in every county in Oregon, readily available and prepared to provide this service of distributing the notice to hundreds of thousands of homes and offices. Some reader will recognize the interest of an otherwise unaware party and advise him if he has not already read the notice himself. No other method of achieving notice to unknown parties combines this simplicity, accessibility, and wide reach. It permits the administration of an estate to move ahead without undue delay. Time required to fulfill the due process demands is neatly capsuled into the period necessary for preparation of the notice and its publication in the newspaper. Published newspaper notice becomes more useful and necessary as the administration of estates is streamlined and expedited. It is a protection to the unknown person who may have some interest in a probate matter. We question the wisdom of eliminating by repeal, as proposed in Senate Bill 506, certain provisions of Oregon law which have proved workable and adequate with the passage of time. Specifically, we oppose the repeal of sections which provide that the following notices be published in a newspaper of general circulation published within the county in which action is commenced. ORS 116750, which provides for the publication of notice of sale or lease of property where the heir or divorcee is unknown or non-resident. This provision of present law assumes that any party objecting to disposal of property will avail himself of judicial proceedings to protest his interest once he knows the intent to lease or sell the property. ORS 116762, which provides that before selling real property with private sale, the executor or administrator shall publish a notice of sale of real property. This provision of law ensures the sale will be conducted openly and honestly, and it ensures that the maximum number of bidders will be present and helps assure that the sale will bring the highest price. 42 states now have this provision in their laws. ORS 117610, which provides for the publication of notice of final account. Public notice is thereby given that the judge has set a time and place for the hearing of objections to such final account and settlement thereof. Public notice to all concerned that final settlement is imminent as a safeguard to any parties whose rights may be affected by the settlement of an estate. ORS 1264412, which provides that before a guardian may sell real property at private sale, the guardian shall cause notice of sale to be published in a newspaper if the value of the property exceeds $1,000. This provision helps to assure that the sale will be conducted openly and honestly, and that more interested bidders will participate and thus increase the sale price. We suggest that if this committee decides to give favorable consideration to Senate Bill 506, that amendments be prepared which will either restore the present laws relating to publication of notices or substitute suitable provision for public notice via publication in the newspaper. So I might add that if we were questioned in the Senate hearing, the newspaper people were never consulted during the preparation of SB 506. We were asked why we didn't make any particular complaint at the time or during the time that it was presented. We were never involved in it in any way. I would suggest, too, that actually the newspaper people throughout the state is, for a good share of the public, is not particularly aware of this thing or knows what's going on. We're not objecting to the idea of expediting the estates or in any way, but we are concerned. We're not talking about a matter of money. As all of you know, we're talking about a tiny amount of dollars in the total probate costs of an estate. involved in the majority of the states, but we sincerely question the advisability or the wisdom of producing the publication of notices that are, we think, are in the interest of the protection of people when they are concerned.
Thank you, Mr. Levine. Are there any questions? Mr. Cole.
You referred to the repealer of 126.441(2).
On page 102, starting line 5, is it deleted? Page 102, starting line 5.
I don't have a 102. That's my problem. I'm blank.
There's something here they didn't want you to know about it. All right, before we publish this. All right.
What I was talking about was when the hearings were, when they were working on the bill for the last several years and drafting it. Because some of the senators asked us, well, why didn't you raise your objection? There had been a considerable amount of testimony by the National Newspaper Association legislative people before the during the drafting.
I have been quite concerned because
known to the papers, with the exception of the Eugene Record Guard and their story, which they carried last December, an interview with Dan Sellard, Bill Rilsbarger, which I understand Bill objected to parts of it. But there has been no public discussion of Bill or the what we're trying to do here. And today, after coming up here, I talked to two of the layman legislators in the House, and neither of them had read the bill nor understood what it was all about. I know editors do not understand it, and I think that's one reason why more newspapers have not tried to comment on the proposed changes editorially or news stories. So, I think the committee, the bar, have done a good job of educating members of the bar. I am not too happy about the way in which the general public has been informed or has not been informed about this bill. I would like to make one other comment, and this is the result of our appearance before the Senate Judiciary Committee, when one of the members said it really doesn't make any difference because people never read these legal advertisements or public notices. Actually, the readership studies which have been conducted all around the country kind of knock this argument into the cockpit. The most inclusive study was done by Dr. Schramm Lutke, and it was an analysis of 32 readership studies of weekly newspapers from all parts of the country. And in that study, they found that legal advertising was read by 25 3/10% of the community. In other words, it's rated above the farm column, rated above the national advertising, rated just 1 point below local display advertising, and actually only 13 points below the editorial. The readership studies in the daily field on the average show that 1 out of 8 persons do read the public notices or legal advertising. Another factor, I think, which contributes to the readership and the way in which the legal notices are prepared. I don't know, when I get into this one, I almost wonder if this is not a movement on the part of the bar to stop some attorneys from advertising. Because here is one notice of final account in which the body of the notice took 7 lines, 3 more lines for the name of the administrator, and the date published, and 6 lines for the name and address and so forth of the attorneys who were placing the advertisement. So I noticed that's quite common. We feel that in order to encourage readership of notices of this kind,
the name of the estate. It'd be the very first line of the note. And this is a practice followed by the Daily Journal of Commerce and a few other papers. From the very first line, so that the person glances at that notice to creditors and notice to final account, they, if they recognize the name, become concerned. And that's one way in which we can encourage wider readership of this type of public notice.
The time when I began this chore, I was a staff counsel for the First National Bank. since then I've been engaged in private practice. Senate Bill 506 was introduced at the request of the Committee on Law Improvement. Alan Carson is the chairman of that committee. Robert Jordan, Gene Compton, Paul Geddes, Don Husband, Bill Love, Don Bolette, Manly Strayer, Tom Mahoney are members of the Committee on Law Improvement. The Law Improvement Committee is charged by statute with the duty to examine the Constitution, statutes, and common law of the state for the purpose of discovering defects and anachronisms therein and recommending needed reforms, and for the further purpose to recommend from time to time such changes in the law as are necessary to modify or eliminate antiquated and inequitable rules of law and to bring the law of the state into harmony with modern conditions. Now, the very first thing the Law Improvement Committee did when it was first created and had its initial meeting in 1963 or 1964 was to say the thing we need most to correct to bring into harmony with modern conditions is our probate law. The Law Improvement Committee has authority to appoint advisory committees, and it proceeded forthwith to appoint an advisory committee, antedating Mr. Dacey and his How to Avoid Probate, the advisory committee was a group of rather distinguished people, myself excluded. Judge William Dixon, who is the probate judge in Multnomah County, as some of you know, was appointed the chairman of the advisory committee. Stanton W. Allison, who is here with me today, has had a great deal of experience in legislation affecting real estate titles particularly. He has acted for the advisory committee as legislative counsel during the past several months, and he has been an outstanding assistant. Herbert E. Butler, Vice President Trust Officer of the United States National Bank of Oregon, is a member of the advisory committee. Walter P. Carson of Salem, whom some of you know, senior, is a member of the advisory committee. Otto Kronmeyer of Metzburg, an outstanding contributor who journeys to Portland every month for 4.5 years, for a day and a half session on this meeting, was one of the members of the committee. Tom Gooding of Baker, no, LeGrand, is another member of the committee who flew down the Columbia Highway, I think, in order to attend committee meetings nearly every session. Don Husband of Eugene. Nick Jarecki of Jarecki and Love Probate Practice is a member of the advisory committee. Patricia Lindbach of Portland. Tom Matt, Professor of Law at the University of Oregon. William Riddlesberger and myself were the members of the advisory committee. Before the advisory committee had got well started on its job, the probate committee of the Oregon State Bar came around and said, "What can we do to be helpful to you in this work?" And the net result was that the two committees met jointly from that time forward. The Law Improvement Committee, the Probate Committee of the Oregon State Bar, as do other committees of the Oregon State Bar, a revolving membership, so that over the period of 4.5 years while we were working on this code, there were changes in the identity of the Probate Committee who were sitting with the Advisory Committee. There were in all some 35 members of the Advisory Committee during that period. And I should say that of them, perhaps 25 members were rather actively engaged most of the time while they were on the probate committee in this work. We called in 7 special consultants who had special knowledge and ability in particular fields. So the code that is before you is a product of some 40 or more lawyers who worked about 4.5 years in its preparation. People who have a definite interest in probate law, the probate members, the probate committee members, are members because they sought to be assigned to that committee. The advisory committee members were people who were selected because they were believed to have some competence. And then there are a great many other lawyers who have made constructive criticisms and valuable suggestions. I don't know how many people have actually been engaged in the preparation of this proposed code. The committee met once a month on the third Friday and Saturday of each month for a day and a half. We met Friday afternoon and all day Saturday. Sometimes we adjourned a little early on Saturday. The Legislative Council attended our committee meetings and prepared minutes of them and obtained and circulated literature that we thought might be helpful. And he was very helpful in many ways. The need for probate revision is a need which has been felt throughout the United States, and there have been a good many codes and proposed codes of probate law in other states. We referred nearly every time we considered any question to the new codes, our proposed codes in Iowa, Wisconsin, New York, and to some extent, Washington. They have a new code that's not a very radical new code. It's a patchwork job. There is a proposed uniform code that is now in its fifth working draft, and we worked with the uniform code, or in draft, and found much excellent language in it, which we adopted, many excellent ideas which we accepted, some in which we thought that they proposed uniform code fitted less the Oregon problems than some other disposition, and so we looked at the laws elsewhere or we used our own thoughts. We've taken ideas and length from many sources, and in this proposed preliminary draft of probate code, which went to every lawyer in the state, we have had editorial comments to indicate the source of this material so that you would know where it came from. When this preliminary draft was mailed out to the lawyers in the state, criticisms were invited. We had 16 meetings with local bar groups in the state, attended by members of the advisory committee and the state bar committee, at which we attempted to touch upon the highlights and to answer questions and to particularly to invite criticisms and suggestions. And we got a good many, and some of them were very excellent. And when we put out our quasi-final draft, we had adopted a good many of the suggestions that came into us at these meetings. We presented that draft to the Law Improvement Committee, and it went over it section by section very carefully, and it made some changes. Not very great changes, I think, but it made some changes. I suppose no bill has ever received more careful study from so many lawyers as this bill has received. The draft as revised was then introduced by the Senate Committee, the Judiciary Committee of the Senate, at the request of the Law Improvement Committee. And before introducing it, the Judiciary Committee of the Senate had spent 2 days in a review of the highlights of the proposed code which it was asked to introduce. When it was introduced, it was referred to the Judiciary Committee, of course, and it spent 5 committee sessions reviewing the code. I was present at only 2 of them. Dave Frost was there at all of the 5 sessions, as I understand it, and he is going to give you a report of what he thinks is most important, at least. In the Senate, there were a number of amendments made, mostly in the style. Legislative Council is responsible for suggesting those. And I should say that this bill has received very careful consideration both of style and substance, and it is excellent in both respects. My understanding is that Legislative Council has some further amendments to propose in this committee. And I don't know what they are. I assume from the beginning that they are desirable amendments. I am concerned only because this legislature is drawing toward a close, and I don't want this bill to get lost. I want the Senate to have time to adopt, concur in the House amendments if there are. My purpose in making this preliminary statement to you is primarily to emphasize the fact that the bill has received a lot of careful study from a few many competent people. I'm very anxious that it shall receive your favorable consideration. You will hear Mr. Lundy's proposals of amendments. You will act upon them. I hope that if you do not conclude your deliberations today, you will continue to keep this at the head of your agenda until your considerations are complete. Now I will surrender this hot seat to Mr. Frost.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it. We appreciate all the work that's been done by the law enforcement group as well as us from the state club.
It has been an important and valuable work. It's also been a great pleasure.
May I ask this gentleman a question?
You may.
Did you hear the testimony by the Oregon Newspaper Publishers Association?
Yes, I did.
Do you disagree with that position?
Well, my bill speaks for itself. Yes.
Tell me your logic in not wanting public notification of some of these things.
Yes, I can. I thought I would save that until after Mr. Frost had given his review, at which time it was contemplated that answers, questions and answers would be the order of the day. Now, if you want an answer, I'll make it. If you would prefer to defer it,
I thought you were leaving.
I'm not leaving. I'm going to stay with you.
Well, I'd like an answer or something.
I'll give you an answer.
Always pass it.
I think so.
Okay. Honorable Mr. Frost. All right. Would you like to come up first, Bob? Do you think that would be in order?
Most of the improvements, Mr. Chairman, are to resolve conflict with other bills.
The bills that are currently
in the five other bills which conflicted, and then they were dealing with the same statute Texas. One of them is the Court of Appeals bill. Both of these amendments I have, I've been trying to follow along with these conflicts for the past couple of months. There are five bills at this point. We'll have to resolve the conflict of the fingers. Those are primarily the amendments that I've proposed.
Well, I would assume that from what you're saying that they would be non-controversial.
Why is the technical amendment to resolve the conflict between
the other? Then are you saying that we ought to hold off until the last couple of days of the session to pass the bill so that we can be heard?
Hopefully the way we try to resolve the conflict will four of the bills that are conflicting off and pass will pass. The other one, the Court of Appeals,
so I understand the rules probably pass will pass. But I think the adjustments should be made on the basis of the substance of the rules pass and probably pass before this one. So. Are you saying that you would prefer that
we
amend 506 rather than the Court of Appeals?
Largely because 506, as you may have noticed, 506 takes effect on July 1 of 1970. All of the other bills, including the Court of Appeals bill, take effect much earlier than that and will be applicable to the subject matter before the COVID code would take effect. In fact, so it's a little easier to make the adjustments in 506. I've done the preliminary work on that. Whenever you're ready, I'll Obviously, the effective date stands up in 1002 chapters to resolve the conflict of the 1971 Texas. Conflicts are substantial in 1002.
Any other questions? Not? Sorry. Let me go through the thing, not page by page, not detail by detail, but using the major changes which the law improvement committee, or the advisory committee, the law improvement committee, has set forth. We'll do it rather quickly, and if you have detailed questions from your prior reading of the bill, I'm sure Mr. Ballinger can help you out. So here's, of course, complete revision of the trade procedure. There are some other brief changes. One of which is, in the bill itself, any place that suits the property, there's no distinction between real and personal property that treats the same. The concept of dower and courtesy is finally gone. That is for you, I think, is a great idea. Jurisdiction for probate court, they tie to death the problems which are in the sense of taking powers away from various provisions you have, and the requirement of those courts which presently have probate jurisdiction in the business court. You'll find that in Article 1, Part 2, provides for district court judges being the probate judges in certain instances. Provides also for probate commissioners who would handle unconfessed matters once you're in the most often courts to be the personal will of probate and appoint the personal defendant. It would probably be the county clerk if I had to justify the appellate. The county clerk would act in this capacity. Anytime there's a contested matter, then of course it goes to the court to order records. The notice, which we've heard about today, the notice generally provided the publication of the notice is required, as I recall, in one place, that is the notice of creditors, as we now know it. The original provision provided for two publications. If you know, the prior statute required, in essence, five publications in four consecutive weeks. The Senate changed the 2-3. There is no provision for publication as far as sale of real property, either by a document or by a minute. The notice is generally given by mail. There are good provisions for mailing notices in prison there as a need. Power and authority of the writ representative to act without court order is broadened rather widely. It would be my guess that even though a personal representative has the power to do almost everything without a specific court order, there would be many instances when careful practitioners might want to take the order to pack it up. But the personal representative does have very broad powers as far as what he can do. He's not going to do anything he wants to. The period of time for the probate, minimum time is short for the present 6 months, or effectively 7 months of publication requirement, down to 4 months. The requirement for publication notice of the filing point of consent is provision for the requirement of mailing information specified in the code to, again, interested persons who define it in the code, which everyone is headed to this in the ask of the state or errors. There's some very broad provisions also for the court providing spouses and minor children. And the court has given a great deal of power to provide for the far more than our present code allows. That goes so far as to say that if the estate appears to have been solvent after the court has taken care of the minor children, the providing spouse, that you can have an effective short form probate of the children's estate, which is certainly the situation we have presently with the requirement to see the $5,000 estate, like the $100,000 estate as far as claims are concerned. Rules of inheritance are changed. At least in my mind, they weren't terribly radically changed, but they did, again, by abolishing the distinction between dower and courtesy. In fact, treating this personal property is exactly the same. We aren't faced anymore with
best interest of real property to survive and sound. There are some inventory appraisal provisions. It's a little different. We find it terribly different. You can't have a situation in return of value without appraisal, which I think is excellent. That does provide for not three appraisers in each specific instance, but allowance that the court can appoint appraisers and appraisers. The decision also describes specifically that the appraiser may be different people for different assets. Again, get away from the courthouse counties with your lack of knowledge. And then have the lawyers that you can pay for. That's all it's going to do. No, I'm claims against the estate. Refers to the present procedure in which claims must be presented to and approved by the personal representative. The code provides claims that are considered allowed as presented in less than 60 days after presentment. The personal representative notifies the claim that it is not. Rather than now having the presumption that the claim is not, we have even built a break. Accounting distribution, present requirement for semi-annual accounting presents to the people follow. again, have a copy from the state for direct involvement.
What's your question, Tom?
We polished down, you see, and stops it, and it's like, okay, and we're about to start on it.
That's me, that's a good thing.
Did you do that?
Well, I would like to go to court, but it's a bad thing, more for that, but they are the business.
Yeah.
I missed you on the final claim procedure.
What about the reverse of the presumption now, claim denied, presumption allowed? Unless the court case is given for the 6 days to take the final claim, the first one's in.
Jack?
Dave, what's the logic for taking out the notice of the publication?
Shortening the time, cuts the cost, and the fact that Wildline can't disagree with this in this study. My personal feeling, notices published in the paper on the legal section, and I don't know what kind of type to call it, but it's small type, doesn't really do the job. There is a provision for publication in the event when a person who dies in the state is about to be probated. This allows claimants to come in and file their claim. The logic is from that point on that the people who are interested have been given notification. The code does require that written notification be given to specified people. I'm sure they assume from that point on that they're going to watch the
code. Well, now this one about you've taken out the notice before a guardian can sell private property. Now, that I oppose strongly because I know Pioneer Trust, by their advertisements, has gotten a lot more money than they've been offered, and they've gone through this thing, and people come out of the bushes. And I almost bought a house once until they published it, and I was out of the market.
Part of the problem is that showing the future kind of fell out. He's a real property, even with the state itself. The people's state are guiding for the state. A long gone out to get most of the money they draw with a power of sale provision. It waives the requirements of the statute for publication notice. And I can only bet that most of the states will take larger estates with probably the same goal that you won't for publication notice.
This would be by a private guardian, probably not done by a trust of the banks or a trust company?
Oh, either done through by a listing or selling the realtor. The problem is you have a buyer who wants to buy it, you're going to sit around and wait for 4 weeks publication.
My experience is they prefer to publish because, one, they figure they'll get more interested people. Two, they're protected if the feds ever come looking around at their records. Let's see, did you do right by that estate?
Wally?
I think that
you
have to, many people, I would presume, would continue to publish under a state sale. How you get this by can't keep sale or is it garage sale or estate sale terms and laws. I think the only people that read the notices of the sale of the real property are those who frequently shop to see the estate.
No, that isn't true, though. It's the lawyers who read them to be sure the newspaper has to follow up their
numbers.
Well,
apart from those, which is the greatest fleet readership.
Just put my name right in.
Which may have very well may not affect the challenge of validity for notice. I think that if you're worried about getting bidders, the better way to do it is to do it by letter or promote.
Well, public notice in general, I'm concerned with. I'm surprised. I'm interested to know what Don Husband thinks of this. Because he fights like the devil to get public notice and everything else.
Well, it's public notice.
But this on selling a real property does concern me.
Well,
I think they can do a better deal for the estate if it's commonly published or whatever they call it.
Well, Jack, I think it's a big question. Say, oh, any of the property and the type of property itself after they're listing under the real estate, the real estate column, or looking at the real estate, or breaking the pieces and stuff.
But this says they don't have to advertise it.
That's right, but they have also...
The guardian could make a deal with somebody and just go ahead and sell it.
No, the guardian would violate the trust, and again, it has a good provision, and they can't do it, can't do it as far as the duty. And if it is very self-dive, the trust knows the law. If he violates it, he tells it to put in a lot of money that it shouldn't be, put in the law.
considerable range of science in what something's worth reasonably and what you can get for it if you get more than one person interested. That's what I'm getting at.
I think you have to prove that whoever's going to tell it will follow the law and discharge the trust. It's going to be a trust. We won't get that one.
Who are you agreeing?
Are there any other questions of Dave? Are there any other questions for members of the law improvement committee?
When the thing was handed out, it was talking in late place to the proposed code, having some changes made.
How do you
how do you coordinate the...
It is. We have done a
job, I think, of revising the provisions for notice. We have provided for a notice to creditors. We have provided for its contents. We provided initially that it should appear in two publications. We thought it would probably bring it to as many people's attention as five publications would. The Senate Committee of Judiciary increased that number to three publications. We think this is adequate. Now, on the question of sales of real property, again, there's no distinction reasonably made between sales of securities and sales of land. And we didn't think there ought to be such a distinction. Moreover, every well-drawn will that you see contains a provision waiving the requirements of the law that before you may sell real property, you must issue a citation to the parties in interest. They must appear or consent. You must then publish a notice of private sale before you can proceed to sell. I'm going through all this now in a small proceeding involving properties worth about $3,000 down in Douglas County. I'm having two publications. That is, two different notices are being published, one a citation, the other a notice of sale. And when I get all through, if I can find a buyer, I'll be ready to sell. This seems expensive,
well,
dilatory.
The difference between expensive, dilatory, bulky, and whether or not it's useful.
Yes.
Are you saying that it's also, in your mind, not useful?
I am definitely saying that it is also not useful in my mind, yes.
May I ask another question?
You may.
Thank you, sir. On some of these counties where you're going to allow the county court, and obviously I don't know half of what I'm talking about, but it concerns me that you could have three farmers or two farmers and a druggist who are politically oriented to some extent making these decisions.
This is not the Board of County Commissioners. This is the county judge.
That's what you said, though.
Yeah, well, it's county court. The county court is not the Board of County Commissioners and is sitting in probate. It's the county judge.
Counsel, has there been any noticeable trends in the other states? Are you familiar with the limits also?
Yeah.
To limit what?
Publication. Limit somewhat.
I don't think we, if we have made a study of what changes were made in the other states in that respect, I'm not aware of
it. We'll look into it. Something that's a pleasure.
One other thing I meant to say about this publication of notice. The other publication that was mentioned by Mr. Webb or Mr. Aldine was a notice of final account. We do not provide for a published notice of final account. We do provide for a mail notice that goes to every heir and to every creditor whose claim has not been paid.
Something I've noticed that doesn't really contain the bill, and bill doesn't change that respect. Dave is in the same situation, I think, that we are, that I am in my county. We have 11 newspapers, or 9 newspapers, one daily, and yet one out-of-county newspaper has a larger combined circulation than all of the rest of them, and you can't use it. Your exposure, you know, that much better.
Can I ask one more question?
Yes.
These county judges, are they trained lawyers?
They need not be. Many of them are not.
I think this would be desirable.
They have been sitting in probate for years. They've done an acceptable job, acceptable to their community.
Now, we've got lots of talk around here about getting rid of JPs. I assume that this is an important area of law.
It is an important area of law.
Making big changes.
And
is it the travel distance we're worried about, or because there aren't circuit courts?
I find it difficult to defend the decision that was made because it wasn't my decision.
Thank you. That's what I'm here.
Okay.
Are the commissioners lawyers?
They need not be, no.
They need not be?
They need not be.
Why
not?
Why did you make the decision that they need not be?
Wait a minute. We're talking about different commissioners.
No. I'm talking, Dave. Dave said that alternatively.
Yes. The probate commissioner is required to be a lawyer, except if he be a county clerk. And commonly, the common clerk, county clerk, we think, will be the person designated by rule of court with authority to do these very limited things. A, to appoint an executor or administrator. B, to fix his bond. Period.
In an
incandescent proceeding, yes. Actually,
almost a ministerial place.
It is a ministerial function.
So
Actually, I don't know what it is in all of your counties, but in the more populous counties, I think the experience of all of us has been that we go into the probate courtroom and we sit there for 15 minutes or so, waiting for an opportunity to take an order, which is a perfectly routine order. We will not be appearing in probate court for routine orders if this code is enacted. There will be no occasion to go into the probate court unless you want instructions from the court. If you want to instruct the court to do, if you want the court to instruct the personal representative to do something or to refrain from doing something, either on behalf of the representative or on behalf of some party in interest, you may file a petition. And the court then takes jurisdiction and makes its order. But in the absence of a petition, the administrator administers. And that's the extent of it. He files his final account when he's through, and he justifies what he's done if there are objections to his final account.
Can I ask a question more on this?
We're here for Tom.
I haven't gotten through to all the code, but obviously you've eliminated that order and notice of determination of facts.
We have. We provide that you make your report on inheritance tax to the state treasurer. And if he doesn't differ with you, you settle your differences if you can. And if you can't settle your differences, then you go into court. Which sounds very tense.
I hate to interrupt at this point, but I think there was an inadvertent answer to a question that wasn't entirely accurate about the point of the probate commission. He still says that the court can appoint the county clerk or some other suitable person. I think the answer was made to the investigation.
Thank you, Brother Greg. I have to do it.
We were told that the police are holding up the intermediate appeal. Was that to say the council that doesn't have the amendments ready?
Have me return, I'll be glad to do so.
I appreciate all the work all of you have done.
relates to a section of the bill on which questions were asked to the Senate committee, reflecting perhaps the fact that the section wasn't written clearly enough. It is a section which relates to the application of the probate code as reflected in 506 to wills which were executed prior to the effective date of the code. The question arises, does the new code apply to those wills or does it not apply to those wills? We had Representative Cross, who may have been at that session of the Senate committee, at which we spent some time deciding whether this meant that this revived power and courtesy for this purpose, does this revive the old provisions on election against will for the purpose or not. And I think the Senate committee was satisfied with the explanation that some of us endeavored to give, but it did raise in our minds that maybe it wasn't phrased as artfully as possible. And I have prepared, and I have copies for your members, if they're interested, of first some of these minor technical amendments that were brought to my attention by advisory committee members, three of them. Second, alternative provisions in the application of the Act to wills which were executed before the effective date. Give you a choice. Either you want the new code to be applicable to them, or you do not want it to be applicable to them. And hopefully they're phrased better and can be understood perhaps a little better than the present provision in the code. And I'll leave these here if you're at all interested. These are in addition to the amendments which are designed only for the technical purpose of resolving conflicts in the bill.
Okay. Bob, did you say that the effective date of this would be July 1, 1971?
Intermediate courts win.
My water this year.
There's 59. Okay, that answers my question.
It'll have to apply to you.
Why did they pick that date, you know?
Meaning the intermediate court or the probate?
On the probate, because this should give you a chance to sort of...
First, it'll give you a chance to become familiar with it. Second, because there will be some change in administration on the county level, such as commissioners, some shift of jurisdiction, and the thought this might affect county budgets and other budgets. So it was based on a fiscal year time. In other words, in July 1, and it was thought that July 1 of this year was just too soon to take advantage of that aspect of it.
Okay. Carl,
did
you have something more that you wanted to say?
The question was raised a moment ago about what other states require in the way of publication. I have a compilation here of all of the states. Yes, we know that 25 of the states require a notice of appointment. This is before the personal representative is appointed, to give anyone who objects to that appointment a chance to appear. The notice of the creditor is required in 49 of the states. The notice of final settlement in 31. The notice of intent to sell real estate in 33. The notice of public sale of real estate in 42.
Carl, do you have an extra copy of that?
I don't, but I will have a copy immediately with you.
That's fine. You don't have to do it today.
Bill here has a comment on a situation which happened in Amarillo County. I think it's a very good reason why a publication on notice of on the sale of real property is very helpful.
Bill,
yes, I'm glad to get a chance to come back. Because
we're very Democratic.
Well, okay, fine. But anyway, Mr. Frost opened this up a little bit on the question of cost, and it's come up. I believe this article in Eugene put the cost of probating a $50,000 estate at approximately $5,000, of which publication and fees were $70, and I'm sure that the publication would involve $14 or $15. So out of $5,000 cost, this is what they were talking about in the publication notices, that it's not a factor, it isn't a factor of me. But as a citizen, I'm extremely concerned about this, and probably you can shoot me down as attorneys because, frankly, I don't know, but I'm uneasy. There is a tremendous amount of delegation of authority to this personal representative, and it seems to me that in establishing this code, we are eliminating some of the public safeguards which do exist. Now, I will admit that in the preparation of wills, almost all of them provide for the disposal of property without a notice. However, in some there are not. I think that this still operates in the euphoria that all people are honest. And despite the fact that the bar makes an effort to see that its members are honest, some of them are not. Now, I have personal knowledge of some estates in which a substantial amount of property has ended up in the ownership of the attorney over a period of years. That this has happened. I know of one particular building in our community that was going to be sold and go into an attorney's hands at a very low figure until somebody happened to find out about it. And another fellow in town contacted the heirs who lived in Central Oregon and found what the sale was going to be and got into it. And he bought the building at a substantially higher price than was going to be paid. Now, I realize that these things are illegal, but they do happen. And as I say, as a private citizen, I'm uneasy. I think the bar should be uneasy about establishing some of these tremendous amounts of power in hands of particularly, maybe I'm wrong again, but in the states perhaps where there isn't a will and so forth, but the possibility of removal of property, which later could develop that there were heirs or that there were people who had an interest in, the publication of notice gives them a great deal of protection. And certainly, I know, even in final account, although we're sending the notice to all known heirs, people turn up every once in a while. And I don't think these things involve, because they can be written into the measures, they don't need to delay the operation of the estate. I wonder, in the cost, again, as I get back to that, this is so inconsequential. But I'm really concerned about some of these other things as a citizen, and frankly, I don't know very much about it. And I would, in one commercial, as a publisher of a newspaper in Representative Pinns County, I would object to his comment because our newspaper has penetration far higher than that other newspaper in the area in which it serves.
Now, far higher.
Publishing the notices where there is nobody going to read them.
You see,
Statute does it.
Sure.
It almost every state.
President published in the county.
Yes, in the county.
I introduced two questions. Yeah. The one you brought up and then the one in Mike's kit, which is different.
There is no reason it costs the same in a small publication as it does in a large one, with the exception of areas of over how many thousand population?
40,000.
Over 40,000 population. So Marion County, they could go. Huh? Or over 40,000. Yeah, over 40,000 circulation, yes. So then the paper over 30,000 or 40,000 circulation has a different rate. This is the reason that you have the Daily Journal of Commerce in Portland, because the cost of the Oregonian is so tremendous. But the Daily Journal of Commerce has a very intensive readership of people who read it just for that purpose, so it does get good readership. In our area, it costs the same in the newspaper at 200 circulation or in our newspaper of 5,000, which pretty well covers the county. So there's no reason to publish it in a small, unless you want to hide it.
Then, if I understand correctly, then it's been re-amended into the existing law and requires you to publish it in the paper in the county that has the highest circulation. But this would be moving towards public notice.
Yes, this I would have to agree with.
What would you do with giveaway?
They're not a legal publication. No.
Carl, part on your question. We do have, in present law now, the requirement that the county, in publishing their commissioner's proceedings, their annual statement, financial statement, must designate the official paper. And that is set up in the law that it must be the county is over 10,000. The two newspapers with the largest circulation within the county. Now, this question which you raised has been raised before, and the attitude in the past has been, with the legislature of the public, that the private notices, such as we're talking about here today, they should be able to sleep in whatever paper they will. Frankly, anyone who believes in the philosophy of public notice, I think, would subscribe to getting the best buying you can or the largest number of subscribers, because you're picking the same legal rate anyway. You know that there has been some instances where the client and possible attorney wanted to use the paper with the smaller circulation simply because they did not want wide readership of the public. I think it's wrong.
What would you do if you were an attorney and had to publish a notice about a decision of state? And the decedent died and is a long-time resident of Oak Ridge. Where would you publish your notice in Marin County?
I would publish it in Oak Ridge for the simple reason that someone that still lives in Oak Ridge with no members of that family would be more happy to reach the unknown parent, I think, by publishing Oak Ridge and the world in the rest together.
I don't know this, but do more people in Oak Ridge take the register guard than take the Oak Ridge paper?
I would doubt it very much. Generally, the readership of newspapers increases as the size of the newspaper decreases. In other words, an 8-page Oak Ridge Telegram be read more thoroughly by an Oak Ridge resident than a 40 or 48 page registered press, simply because it has more time to read and not as many things to read. That's the generalization.
If you say this would also be true of the Eugene and the Springfield, the registered press and the Springfield News.
The Eugene was
The question of the number, the frequency of publication, we questioned this to some extent in the Senate.
Okay, there being nothing.